Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
You ready?
Ready?
Ready? Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4!
No roof, no bank, no fashion anyway.
Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, brought to you by not just Missy AE, but also the Whispers groups as well. I am your host, Steve. As always, I am joined with me by Lou. And for those of you guys that want to call in, talk some sports, you can call in at 657-383-1308. Depending on how my voice is, maybe we will be on for the full 3 hours tonight. Not sure. Kind of dealing with a bit of a scratchy throat tonight, so we will see how things go. But how are you doing tonight, Lou?
All right.
Well, we have
family over as well.
Oh, okay. Well, we have, you know, Lou, we have a lot on the plate tonight. We have the MLB playoffs to talk about. We have, of course, the NHL and the NBA starting back up. We got the fight between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder tonight as well. The trilogy to go along with quite a few boxing trilogies in boxing's past, so much more, because we'll also be looking at where certain head coaches may stand entering the NHL season as well this year. Let's just say there's also been quite a few injuries that we have to talk about as well.
No kidding.
And maybe a bit of a controversy. And I figure maybe we will start off with that. And it involves Raiders coach John Gruden, who apparently sent an email. This was back during the 2011 lockout. I'm kind of surprised it's being brought up now all of a sudden.
Why now? It's 10 years ago.
That's what's odd about it. This was back. I don't even think he was in the league at this point. I think he was wasn't he working for ESPN back then?
Yes.
Well, apparently he used a racist trope to describe he is still the current executive director of the NFL Players Association, Damari Smith, where supposedly, according to the Wall Street Journal, Gruden wrote in his email that dumb Boris and, you know, it spelled out D-U-M-B-O-R-I-S-S, Smith, has lips the size of Michelin tires in the email that was sent during the height of the NFL lockout that had taken place back in 2011.
Right, yeah.
And you know what's weird? Maybe I'm just dumb and I'm not getting it, but I don't see how this is a racist trope.
No, I don't think so either.
Calling it saying he has lips the size of Michelin tires, is that because are they trying to insinuate that all black people have big lips or something? Is that what the whole big deal about this is?
Maybe. I mean, I don't get that myself.
Yeah, I really don't understand it, but Gruden, who recently apologized about the incident, said that he was upset with how Smith was handling the CBA talks at the time, and he reaffirmed to the Wall Street Journal that he had used a horrible way of explaining it. Now, the NFL has since released an empty statement on the matter, stating that the league condemns the statement and regrets any harm that that its publication may inflict on Mr. Smith or anyone else. Basically, the normal bullshit that you would hear from, you know, from a released statement by any league. It also says that the league is also reportedly sharing emails pertaining to Gruden with the Raiders, while a person familiar with the matter said that the NFL is currently discussing his current status with the club. So it sounds like maybe perhaps Gruden may end up being suspended or potentially fired because of an incident that took place 10 years ago. And, I mean, I can kind of understand why, considering the current climate that we are in right now. But what are your thoughts, Lou, on this incident?
Well, it happened 10 years ago. I mean, I don't know why you're making the federal case about it now. You should have done something about it back then, you big dope. I mean, what's the point of dragging it to the mat all this time later?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, you would think that if it was such a big deal, it would have been brought up back then instead of although, you know, who knows, maybe it's because at the time ESPN, I believe he was working for ESPN at that time, but at that time they weren't really being, you know, they weren't really being investigated for certain things. So this is obviously something that had been dug up by the media, by the Wall Street Journal, while ESPN was being looked into within the past couple of years. And this was obviously one of those things that came up. So do you think, Lou, that he's going to face any sort of punishment for this? Because, I mean, granted, you know, it is a potential bad look on the franchise to hire somebody who would make those kind of statements, but yet at the same time,
I imagine
this was also 10 years ago.
But I don't know exactly but I think there is going to be some form of punishment there.
Yeah, there probably is, but at the same time, you know, it's just plain ridiculous the fact that they're basically digging into stuff that, you know, that was talked about years ago, or that, you know, had happened years ago. You could almost dig up stuff on anybody at this point if they really wanted to, you know, go all politically correct. Basically, they could dig up stuff on anybody if they wanted to.
Right.
So it's, and you know, this isn't the only incident that was that had taken place this week. There was actually something that took place last night in particular, where there was a comment by MLB Network's Jim Catt that was made during a playoff game last night between the Astros and the White Sox, where the Astros ended up going on to beat the White Sox to take a 2-0 series lead in their ALDS series. Now, Cat's comment came in the second inning as Chicago infielder Yoan Moncada had stepped up to the plate when co-announcer Buck Showalter shared a story about the first time he saw Moncada play in person. And he said he remembered asking the Baltimore front office, can we have one of those? Meaning, you know, can we get one of those type of players? To which Cat replied, get a 40-acre field full of them.
Right.
Now, you can obviously tell where that was headed, because that was very obviously a slavery reference.
Slavery
essentially
reference
here.
Yeah.
Well, because when you think about it, you know, the fact that I believe, if I recall correctly, freed slaves were given 40 acres of land or something. I think it was something like that. But, you know, a lot of people are saying that this is basically a reference to slavery when really...
Yeah.
I don't understand why Kat even said this in the first place. I mean, the dude's 82 years old.
And yeah, and
he did end up... Well, he was what?
A former Yankee announcer.
Yeah, that's... And speaking of Yankee announcers, we got to talk about John Sterling in a minute as well. Because that was a funny thing that he said. The way he said something during the Yankees-Red Sox game that we got to talk about. Kat did apologize for the comment a few innings later, mm-hmm. saying that earlier in the game when Yoan Moncada was at the plate, in an attempt to compliment the great player that he is, I used a poor choice of words that resulted in an insensitive and hurtful remark, and I'm sorry for that. And now, because of that, he is getting grilled. He's getting grilled by fans for paying that apology because many are calling him out for sounding like he was reading the statement off of a piece of paper. Like it sounded like it was a statement that MLB Network gave him to say on air instead of it being from the heart, you know, and him really, really apologizing for the stuff that he said.
Yeah.
And obviously, of course, you know, this just comes months after Detroit Tigers announcer Jack Morris was suspended for using a mocking accent during an at-bat by American League superstar Shohei Ohtani.
Yep.
As well as Tom Brenneman, he faced backlash for using a homophobic slur while calling a Cincinnati Reds game last year. So, you know, this is just one of many incidents that have happened so far. And, you know, I almost have to wonder if maybe kind of old age has a little part to play in it. Because when you take into account, you know, how old some of these announcers are that are making these statements, you know, it's almost like at some point you kind of have to wonder with these networks, how long do you really hold on to a guy until it's time to, you know, move on to new blood, if you would.
Yeah.
If you want to call it that.
Right.
Now, the Raiders, they did release a statement. The Raiders did release a statement on Gruden's email calling the contents of it disturbing and not what the Raiders stand for. The team is currently investigating the situation and is in the process of addressing the matter with Coach Gruden. So
right. It
sounds like maybe perhaps there may be some sort of punishment that is handed down because obviously this wasn't brought up when the Raiders originally hired him. So it's possible, you know, we could see a potential mid-season change. Maybe, you know, honestly, maybe as soon as this week, depending on what they decide to do. If they, because you know, they could invoke. It's sort of like what the Jaguars are doing with Coach Urban Meyer. You know, you heard about that video of him sitting at a bar with a young woman, seemingly giving him a lap dance, right?
Oh yeah.
Well, the Jaguars, they're apparently looking at enacting a morals clause in his contract to where they could potentially get rid of him for that reason. Just for that. And you kind of have to wonder if maybe perhaps the Raiders may try to do the same thing here with John Gruden.
Well, Gruden's a dick.
I mean, yeah, he is, but at the same time, you know, he's got the team. This is one of those cases, you know, where you're like, okay, if we get rid of this guy, it's probably going to set our team back.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, do you want to prioritize football or do you want to prioritize, you know, good press and being politically correct? So, right now the Raiders are in a bit of a pickle, a bit of a situation that they did not want to be in.
Right.
You know, it's a really tough spot right now for the Oakland Raiders. Or not Oakland, I'm sorry, the Vegas Raiders. I'm so used to them having been from Oakland, so.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, since I mentioned the Urban Meyer news, the mother of the 24-year-old woman who was dancing on Meyer's lap apparently is reportedly concerned about her daughter's well-being, as she told USA Today this past Thursday that her daughter can't even go anywhere and that the 7-second video clip which surfaced on social media is reportedly ruining her life. Now, the newspaper said it wasn't identifying the woman or her daughter because of the backlash they've received without making any public comments whatsoever.
Right.
And now apparently the younger woman is being investigated by her employer, according to the newspaper outlet. And the marketing company where she works confirmed that the matter is being reviewed, but they didn't have any further comment. And the woman's mother said she's praying her daughter doesn't lose her job because she had just bought a house. The marketing company said it's investigating to determine what, if any, impact that the incident had, but clarified that the woman had been a solid employee in good standing, and the company confirmed it has worked with Meyer's restaurant previously. Now, Urban Meyer did apologize over the incident earlier this week, and he had said that he had been remaining in Ohio, where he has roots previously, to spend time with family and friends and attend an event where, you know, the incident had happened. I mean, you know, Lou, it's kind of weird because just looking at how this whole thing has gone down and the fact that her company has previously worked with one of Meyer's restaurants in the past, you kind of have to wonder if maybe perhaps is Urban Meyer sort of pulling a few strings here.
I wouldn't be surprised by that. You know, there's got to be some kind of string being pulled here. I wouldn't get past it. There's got to be something.
Just because of the fact that they confirmed that they have worked with his restaurant previously, and with her being on the lap supposedly of a public figure like Urban Meyer, this is Meyer's way of basically trying to distance himself from this and trying to make it look as if he's not the person
likely
at fault, which, you know, maybe he really isn't the person at fault, and she was just, you know, dancing too close to him. That could possibly be. Go ahead, Lou.
He's so lucky son of a bitch anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the thing, too, is his wife actually ended up leaving Twitter because of supposedly a whole bunch of threats.
Yes.
Or not threats, but, you know, a whole bunch of hate that she has gotten all over this thing. And she said in a social media post recently, "We all make mistakes. We are all sinners. If you think you aren't, then cast the first stone.
Wrong.
And she said that she's quitting Twitter due to all the hate, vitriol, slander, and trash that she's received in the wake of Urban dancing with a blonde woman in that video. Now, what's interesting about this, though, is that his wife did not make any note of standing by Urban or defending his actions. Though Urban did say earlier this week that he was confident that his 37-year-old marriage, his 37-year marriage, would survive. In fact, he called the whole saga nothing more than a speed bump in their relationship. Jacksonville's front office or ownership has criticized his actions with this incident, with owner Shad Khan calling it all inexcusable.
Yes.
For his actions. And this just seems like it's a saga that's just consistently evolving at this point. And
right.
You know, you kind of have to wonder what's going to come next in this with these developments. If maybe perhaps we may not see just John Gruden get replaced. We may potentially see Urban Meyer get replaced. Well, I mean, Meyer,
oh boy,
it would make sense considering the Jaguars still haven't won yet.
Yeah. Well, I was going to give Urban a break, you know, new team, the chemistry's not there yet. I would have given him the benefit of the doubt, you know, but with this development, goodbye, Charlie.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you, Lou. I would kind of give him, you know, I mean, granted he is a gigantic name in the college scene, I would give him the benefit of the doubt because of the fact that it's a new team. The Jaguars, you know, they have a lot of inexperienced talent, and
yes,
I mean, let's face it, they haven't really been managed all that well. I'm not talking about coaching. I'm talking about, you know, as far as front office goes, they haven't really been managed all that well.
The past
however many years, so. I mean, I would think that Urban Meyer would be safe till at least the end of the year, and then, you know, if they decide that he's one and done, then they'll move on from him. They'll move on from him after the season. But
yes,
I mean, it's obvious at this point they're probably on track to go lose again this week to the Tennessee Titans. So. I mean, you know, they're going to be 0-5. They're going to go. You think they're going to go for 0-16?
0-27.
Oh yeah, 0-17. That's right. I forgot.
No. The all-time record for the biggest losing streak. Because remember, Tampa lost 26 in a row in their first year of existence. So Jacksonville is going for the all-time losing record of maybe losing 27 in a row.
Well, that would probably have to go into next year then, wouldn't it? Because didn't Jacksonville win?
No, because it started the first game of last season, and they haven't won the game since. So they're on their way to being the super suckiest team of the NFL. That could be done by next month. Oh, boy.
Wow, wait a minute. They really haven't won a single game?
Nope.
Wait a minute. That can't be.
It's true.
Hang on.
It's true.
I just honestly I really no, they went 1-15 last year, but let me see when that win was. Wow, that win, yeah, you know what? So right now they have lost their last 19 games and you say the record is what? Currently 26?
26.
So They would need to be 0-12 for them to break that record.
Yes.
To start off the year. They would have to go 0-12.
Yeah.
to start off the year and break that record. And honestly, I mean, let me look at their schedule because, you know, this at some point this could potentially get very ugly to where,
oh yeah,
I would not be surprised, honestly, if Urban Meyer pulls what he did at Ohio State and decides to step away from the game again. So let's see. They face the Titans. They'll probably lose to the Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Against the Dolphins, I'd say maybe it's possible they potentially beat the Dolphins. Maybe.
Really?
But, yeah. I mean, the Dolphins, they have you know, they have struggled to score this year.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They did beat New England, but they only beat New England by 1 point. It was like 17-16.
A win's a win.
So it is, a win's a win. But what I'm saying, though, is that, you know, they have struggled to score. So unless they can put up points against Jacksonville, it's entirely possible that Jacksonville could beat Miami with that.
Hmm.
Two weeks later, though, against the Seahawks, yeah, there's no way they're beating the Seahawks. There's
no
way in hell they're beating the Bills.
No.
The Colts, that's another potential because of how horrible the Colts have been this year so far and how horrible Carson Wentz has played. So I'd say maybe at best they could potentially beat the Dolphins and the Colts. The Niners, they'll lose to the Niners. And let me see, actually, where is – what week is that? Okay.
Before anything else, I got to say, we have an upset here in the making so far.
Yeah, we're talking Alabama, right? 24-10.
That's the one, yep.
What did let me ask you about that. What the hell is going on with Alabama tonight? Because normally they don't struggle this badly against Texas A&M. I mean, I get it's SEC, but I mean, Alabama was favored by what, 14.5?
At least.
And right now, as a matter of fact, Jim, you know, our producer had actually said on his Twitter timeline that, you know, Bryce Young might actually get benched.
Uh-huh. Thanks, boss.
I mean, I don't think we've really seen Alabama get hammered like they like they are currently.
Right. I mean, this could be the biggest upset since losing, you know, in the Iron Bowl that year.
I mean, just wow. Between this and the fact that Texas, they almost upset Oklahoma earlier today. Boise State upset BYU.
Yeah.
10th ranked BYU.
But BYU, you know, was never really that much of a team, you know, until, like, this year. I mean, when was the last time they ever ranked in the top 10, for crying out loud?
True. You know, we haven't really heard much from BYU as being a top football school. So,
no, I kind of figured the bubble's going to burst.
Yeah, so it is kind of surprising that they had gotten out to the strong start that they have so far this year.
Right.
But, you know, so far we've seen upsets take place so far this week. And Virginia Tech, they're currently leading Notre Dame by a slim margin right now, 16-14.
Yeah.
We also, I mean, Texas, I still can't get over Texas. Texas had a gigantic lead They had at least a 38-20 lead at the half, and they blew it, allowing Oklahoma
wow.
to score 25 points in the fourth quarter. They outscored Texas 25-7 in the fourth after Texas got out to a 28-7 lead at the end of one quarter.
Yeesh.
And, you know, 21st-ranked Texas almost upset number 6 Oklahoma. And,
well,
you know, instead we saw Oklahoma pull off some absolute stunners when it came to throws that they were able to get off.
Yeah. Well,
and
I think it can come either way.
You thought that Oklahoma and Texas could have gone either way?
Oh yeah, I mean that's a battle over there. That's a rivalry there. That game could have went either way. That wasn't going to be as an easy win at all. No.
Yeah,
I know my
maybe,
rivalry
you know,
team,
maybe
man.
Not. But
no,
we,
I know a good rivalry. I want to hear one.
Yeah, but you know, we also had another upset almost take place today with Syracuse almost knocking off Wake Forest. But they ended up losing in overtime to Wake Forest, 40-37. Syracuse, of course, was unranked, and Wake Forest now, I think they're now, what, 6-0? And they are...
Now that's not a surprise team, because, you know, Wake Forest, I normally associate with basketball, not football. So,
yeah.
You know, this is a little bit surprising to me.
Yeah, there's quite a few surprise teams that are coming out strong early on this season. Wake Forest, you know, SMU, they improved to 6-0 to start off the year. Florida, they have sort of come back. I mean, they beat the shit out of Vanderbilt earlier today. Not
Vanderbilt
like that's
sucks.
A surprise
Vanderbilt,
at all.
Vanderbilt's a waste.
Yeah, exactly. But like I said,
that was any
surprise at all.
Michigan State,
Michigan State, they're more known for their basketball, and yet they're off to a 6-0 start this year.
They're decent in football too.
I mean, yeah, they're decent, but you know, usually we don't see them get off to an unbeaten record,
true.
So far this year.
But I'm not too surprised by that.
No.
SMU is also a decent, a little inconsistent year by year, but they're a decent football program. It may sound surprising, but not to me really.
Now we also saw a very tight game earlier today between Ole Miss and Arkansas, Arkansas elected to go for the win instead of going for the tie and sending it into overtime. After Ole Miss put up 52 points. However, Arkansas was not able to tie the game or to get the win, as they ended up missing the 2-point conversion. Now, I want to ask you about this loop. Well, because here's the thing. They were having a hard time stopping Ole Miss on offense all year, all game today. And, you know, I read a whole bunch of tweets that Jim had retweeted on his Twitter account, and a lot of them supported the idea that, you know, they had gone for the win instead of going for the tie to force overtime because of the fact that, I guess they didn't really have confidence in their defense today because of the fact that Ole Miss was basically carving up the defense like it was nothing. I mean,
well,
hell.
But that kind
know,
of a score,
the
defense
one sucked of the
anyway.
Throws, one of the throws, the last touchdown that Ole Miss had was a wide-open look on the right side of the field. And they basically went the distance on that one pass. You know, it was so – the coverage was so wide open that it, I can kind of understand where Arkansas fans are coming from here because of the fact that,
yeah,
you know, they were having such a hard time stopping Ole Miss's quarterback today. But it doesn't really help when you're going for the win, and honestly, the throw didn't really seem catchable because it was way too high.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, it was a great game. Arkansas, they fall to 4-2, so they were 13th ranked
right
coming into today. Ole Miss was 17th ranked. They improved to 4-1. So there's probably going to be a, I'd say there's probably going to be a different look when it comes to the top 25 this week. In particular, you know, there was a possibility that obviously Georgia is idle next week. And they did beat 18th ranked Auburn earlier today, assuming
yes
that this 24-10 score holds up, Lou. With Iowa dispatching Penn State earlier today, do you think there's the possibility that we could see Iowa ranked number one?
Either number one, number two. I mean, depending on Georgia, I know that you said, you know, because Georgia, you know, won today. So, I don't know. I think Georgia might get number one.
Yeah,
and
I would kind of think. I would kind of think that Georgia would still be in the number one spot because of the amount
yeah
of, because of the amount of ease that they've had in, you know, in their whole entire schedule so far this season. I mean, if Alabama drops to Texas
yes
A&M, who isn't ranked, I don't know how far they're going to drop, but yeah, it's let me just put it this way. It's not looking too good right now for Alabama at the half.
No.
And, you know, you kind of have to wonder if maybe.
I asked a question last week that with any of the top five teams, you know, like Georgia, Penn State, Iowa, would they have a chance of being Alabama? Of course, they all said no, but did anybody suspect
well,
that?
Well, we
maybe
said Georgia. We said
yeah
Georgia.
Yeah, but another show. My co-hosts all think that I was being crazy, thinking, nah, it's not going to happen. Bama's going to go all the way. But did they ever think they're going to lose against Texas A&M, who dropped out of the ranking last week?
No. Yeah, no. I am completely stunned right now. The fact that A&M is basically sticking it to Alabama right now.
You know, I think I took Texas A&M in this game.
Did you?
I think I did.
Let me look real quick, actually. Cause
you're going to think I'm crazy.
Honestly, I don't even know if you. No, you didn't. You didn't put in a pick for this one. You your three picks for college were Texas, the Longhorns, which of course them blowing that game
well,
earlier
mean,
today.
I don't mean on this show, Steve. I meant from my show because we do predictions as well
oh,
for college.
Okay.
You know, yeah. So that's
oh,
what I meant.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think I did pick Texas A&M to win this game. I sort of like you know. To bounce back from the loss last week. So, so far, I think I'm right.
Yeah, so far
well,
so good
that
for you. You know, you're looking real smart right now. You just
well,
gotta hope that
now,
Alabama.
People.
You just gotta hope that Alabama doesn't wake up in the second half. Because if they
well,
wake up in the second half, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Once Nick Saban whips them into shape, you don't
yeah
really know how Alabama's
all right, Nikki,
gonna,
go ahead.
How you don't know how Alabama's going to respond here in the second half. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe perhaps Alabama does does pursue a comeback here, but
right.
It's not looking too good. Right now, though, at the end of three, Michigan, or no, not at the end of three, they're starting. Why did they, ESPN scoreboard is all screwed up. They had them literally at the end of the third quarter, but they're starting the second half right now. Michigan, they are up 13-0 over Nebraska currently.
Right.
Virginia Tech, they still have the 16-14 lead. Kentucky, they are cruising by LSU right now, 21-7, and it looks like they're threatening to score again here as they're currently at the LSU 20-yard line. It's currently halftime for Bama and Texas A&M. It is currently halftime with Texas A&M on top 24-10. San Diego State, they are currently up 7-0 over New Mexico. Georgia over Auburn earlier today, 34-10. Iowa just barely edging out Penn State, 23-20. We talked about just a little bit ago, Oklahoma over Texas, 55-48. Ohio State cruised over Maryland, 66-17. BYU got upset by Boise State, like we mentioned. Michigan State over Rutgers. Ole Miss over Arkansas. Forest over Syracuse. Florida beating the shit out of Vanderbilt. Like, that was really much of a surprise. SMU over Navy, 31-24.
Yeah, Navy.
Some finals from earlier in the week, we had Coastal Carolina with a 52-20 win over Arkansas State. Cincinnati stays unbeaten, 52-3 over Temple. And Arizona State, 28-10 over Stanford last night. And I believe I'm missing... Well, yeah, actually, I'm missing quite a few scores here. This just went final. Buffalo with a 38 to—that's the end of the third quarter. What the? I swear, you know, ESPN, their scoreboard is completely screwed up. This should say the end of the third, not end of the fourth.
Yeah, they always do that though.
Yeah, it's weird. But Buffalo, they currently lead Kent State 38-34. TCU right now over Texas Tech, 45-24. Texas Tech, they're looking to fall potentially to 4-2 if they can't come back here. In a matchup of 4-0 versus 4-1, Air Force over Wyoming right now, 21-14. And, here's one. Utah currently leads USC 21-10. At the half. Memphis, they currently trail Tulsa 7-0.
Yes. Okay.
And you know what? One of the things that we talked about last week, and I figured we should bring this up again, because, you know, the big matchup everybody was looking forward to last week was the Patriots.
Yes.
Against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Tom Brady's return to New England for the first time in two years. Now, I think it's safe to say that the problem with New England is not at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
Because Mac Jones, a lot of people would argue that Mac Jones may have potentially outperformed Brady last week.
Yes. I would think that, you know, Tampa won the game, but Jones was more of the winner.
I mean, Brady had a I wouldn't call it a solid night because he was struggling in the rain. He went a very uncharacteristic close to 50% completion with 269 yards. He did not score a touchdown, and he did not throw a pick. The touchdown actually went to Ronald Jones, and the rest were field goal attempts. For the Patriots, Mac Jones, he completed 31 of 40 attempts for 275 yards, two touchdowns, one pick. The pick, of course, I believe came from Antoine Winfield Jr. But the two touchdowns, there was one to Hunter Henry and one to Jonnu Smith. I think we really saw Mac Jones come out as an NFL starter this past week, even though the Patriots lost on a 56-yard attempt in the rain by a kicker who was injured.
Right.
Now, I want to get your thoughts, Luke, because this has been a highly talked about topic on Boston Sports Radio this week.
Which they
would you, if you, I believe it was 98.5 that this was discussed the
I
most
it,
on the
I
sports
it.
Hub.
I know.
Now,
it.
the final play came down to, it's 4th and 3. You know, New England is at least getting down towards the field goal line, you know, where it would be comfortable for Nick Folk to kick a potential game winner. They had close to a minute left on the clock. They had, I think it was two timeouts, maybe 4th and 3, 56 yards in the rain, with an injured kicker, even though his career high, I believe, was 57. Do you go for the attempted field goal, or would you go for it on 4th down?
How far did you get it from the first down, though, when you're on the 4th down? How far are you?
It was 4th and 3.
Go for it. 4th and 3, go for it.
Especially with Mac Jones, who had only missed 9 passes all game. He was 31 of 40. I don't understand why they went for it. I mean, they claimed that the numbers supported it, like the percentages. They had a higher percentage of potentially winning the game, like a 10% difference. If they decided to kick the field goal as opposed to going for it on 4th down.
Right.
But honestly, if you're – I mean, Mac's last pass was batted down by one of the defensive linemen. But if you're – you know, if you're having such – I shouldn't say an easy time, but if you're not really having any problems going down the field, why don't you just trust the rookie?
Well, how
confident
are you in your rookie? You know, that's the thing. They've always, you know, that's everybody's big problem. How well do you trust your rookie kicker, your rookie quarterback, et cetera, et cetera? You know, a lot of teams, a lot of coaches, you know, they always have doubts about their rookies. You know, so that's the factor right there. And it's a proven fact. You know, how confident are you in your rookie kicker, your rookie quarterback, your rookie, whatever the case may be, you know, It's always been a problem with that. I mean, you never would have expected from a rookie player.
But still, though, you know, this is that's part of the growing pains that you're going to have to deal with a rookie quarterback. You know, and he would learn from the situation. You know, he still hasn't been in a 4th down situation where the game is on the line. You know, where literally, if you complete this pass, we have a chance to win the game. If you don't complete this pass, it's game over. It's turnover on down.
You'll be a hero or a goat.
Yeah. You know, he literally, I think he could have potentially completed it, depending on what play McDaniels gave him to run. I think it's possible that they could have gotten it completed, especially with Tampa having an already depleted defense, and they had lost one of their top defensive players earlier in the game. I mean, they were already thin as it was.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, they ended up losing Carlton Davis due to a quad injury, and it was a non-contact injury. And usually when it's non-contact, that means they're sidelined for quite a bit. They're not coming back in that game. And non-contact most of the time means that it's an extended absence or that the season's done for that certain player.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that being said, there was he was already playing against a shallow defense as it was in terms of depth that I just don't understand why they didn't give him the chance and go for it. Because I'm sorry, if you have a kicker who's dealing with a knee injury, and it was even pointed out on the broadcast by Chris Collinsworth, as much as I hate listening to him talk, the thing that was pointed out to him was it looked like Nick Folk was having a hard time planting with his plant foot. And that was because of the knee injury that he suffered in a practice earlier in the week. I just don't understand in what world do you have a kicker who's injured kick from 56 yards? Now, granted, keep in mind he did have the distance. He did have the distance on the kick. He almost made it. It ended up sailing left at the last second, but he almost made it. But still, I just don't see the reasoning behind it, behind having him going for the field goal as opposed to going for it on fourth down.
No.
And who knows? You know, maybe I never will, but. You know, that's just me. You know, I would have rather.
Yeah.
When you have a kicker like Folk, I mean, granted, I know he's been very reliable this season. And actually, last season, he was very reliable. But at the same time, you got to keep in mind, he doesn't really kick from far. I mean, he used to be able to do it earlier in his career, but he hasn't been able to really kick from far in recent years. So, you know, I really think that that one decision pretty much cost them the game.
I think you're right.
And by the way, a little add-on to the Jacksonville story that we talked about earlier.
Yes.
Urban Meyer, he has a weekly radio show on 1010 XL AM. And during his weekly radio show, he said that he said, and I quote, "The ownership of this team is with the players." As he went on a long fake spiel about earning the players' trust back following the viral videos after skipping the team flight and attempting to move forward with the locker room in unison. And he basically suggested that the 53-man roster that he single-handedly ignored and destroyed is to blame for Jacksonville's 0-4 start.
Yeah.
Now, you kind of have to wonder, if they lose a multi-score game to Tennessee tomorrow, that it's going to get potentially ugly.
I think so.
In Urban Meyer's case.
Yeah, I mean, they want ahead.
Go ahead.
They want Meyer's head right now. They really do.
Oh, I'm sure they probably do. Especially considering knowing the type of guy that they were getting from college and knowing his knowing the resume that he has. And yet he just has not translated to the pros whatsoever. You know, it doesn't stun me at all that that the fans basically want Meyer's head on a silver platter here. Now, here's another thing that we got to talk about as well. And this, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this, but the New England Patriots earlier this week, they traded all pro cornerback Stephon Gilmore. Well, I'm sorry. First, it was announced that they were going to flat out release him from his contract without any compensation. Then it turned out that that was a ploy to get teams to bite, to try and take on his try and take on his contract. The Panthers were the ones to bite as they acquired Stephon Gilmore from the Patriots in exchange for a sixth round pick in not this year's, but next year's draft. And I mean, it's a great move for Carolina. You know, they get they get the 2019 Defensive Player of the Year for dirt cheap. Because let's face it, sixth round pick. I mean, granted, Tom Brady was a sixth round pick, but it's not often that you find sixth round picks that are going to actually translate to anything in the NFL.
No.
So obviously, Gilmore, he remains on the reserve, physically unable to perform list, so he'll have to miss another two games. But this puts the Panthers in quite potentially make a run at the playoffs. Because they just brought in C.J. Henderson from the Jaguars last week, their 2020 first-round pick, C.J. Henderson. And now they also have A.J. Boye, and they have Rashawn Melvin, as well as fourth-year starter Dante Jackson. Now you're going to add Gilmore to that cornerback room? If Gilmore can play, if he can show that he is fully healthy, I mean, this is an absolute steal for Carolina, for a guy who the Patriots could have gotten a second round pick for last year if they decided to trade him at the deadline. But instead, I would have to assume that the reason why it's a sixth round pick is because of concerns about his health. But I mean, how in the hell, Lou, are you going to take a sixth round pick for a guy who was an all-pro?
I don't know if you can.
I mean, you know, just tell me how the hell that makes any sense whatsoever.
I don't think it does. It sounds kind of weird.
I mean, to me, it kind of screams like, okay, you're basically doing this as a salary dump and that you'll basically take whatever – you'll basically take whatever teams want to give you in order to, because he was going to count for, I think it was $7 million against the salary, against the cap this year. Now, obviously, instead of releasing him, they now send the contract over to the Panthers, so they don't have to pay Gilmore anymore because all the responsibility now goes over to the Panthers. But you know, with Carolina starting out 3-1 this year, I mean, it looks very obvious right now that they're going for it. You know, they're going all in with this current group that they have. And it's so damn weird to see Sam Darnold on a winning team right now.
It makes me sick, to be honest. It makes me sick.
I mean, obviously, their only competition in the NFC South is the Buccaneers currently. Assuming that the Panthers continue, if they continue on the path they're going down right now, though it might be a little hard with no Christian McCaffrey. I think he's going to be potentially out for an extended period. You know, it may be tough on them without Christian McCaffrey. And obviously Tampa Bay, it's going to be easy for them this week. They're not going to have, they're going to be facing the Miami Dolphins. So, you know, it's not really, it's not really going to be much of a much of a competition for Tampa Bay at least.
But the thing I'm trying to tell you is this is like, well, you know, I mean, Donald couldn't do jack shit, you know, while he was on the Jets. Now all of a sudden he's, you know, he's on his new team and he's having a career season. I mean, really. I mean, like, did Donald do not want to play for the Jets and, you know, just intentionally? And now all of a sudden he's on a winning team? I mean, really, something does not make sense.
Or was it just the Jets?
Maybe. Well, the coaching wasn't that much of a help either.
True. I mean, you had a guy who looked like he was seeing donuts in the sky. At his first press conference, you know, with the way his eyes were moving all around.
Yeah.
I mean, the way his eyes were moving all around. You know, waiting for questions. It literally looked like he had just snorted a line of coke before getting out there.
Or he took something.
Or he had to have taken something, you know, Adam Gase back then. Possibly that too, yes.
There's a lot of that going around lately.
Now, it does say that, you know, McCaffrey is doubtful for tomorrow's game against the Eagles, but then again, it's against the Eagles. So it's possible that that Carolina may not even need McCaffrey with how the Eagles have played this year so far.
Speaking of McCaffrey's, you heard about what happened with another McCaffrey, which happens to be related. He's the assistant coach, I think it's for Colorado State, and he did the ultimate blunder.
I have not, actually.
He got pissed off because he was losing badly to a schmuck team. And he got so pissed off, he threw his clipboard, and it hit somebody hit a fan of the opposing team. So,
oh boy,
yeah,
oh boy, no, you cannot do that.
The kid that got hit. You know what he said? I'll keep it as a souvenir. So I'm like, oh my god. I'm like, what?
Well, hell, I don't blame him. I mean, it is technically a souvenir, I guess.
But you got hit with it.
Yeah. Oh my God, are you kidding me, Bama? What
no,
the
I'm
fuck
not.
Are you doing?
No. 47
punted it right now to start off the second half.
Okay.
I'm telling you, you know, if you could almost wonder if Texas A&M scores on this next possession, if they go down the field for a touchdown and make it 31-10, you kind of have to wonder if maybe it's just not working for Alabama tonight.
Nope. Everybody was thinking Alabama's going to win. They're going to run the table. Maybe not.
Maybe not, exactly. Because the story of the game right now is that Alabama's offensive line just cannot handle the variety of pressures that Texas A&M is throwing upon it.
Yeah.
That's the big thing so far.
To my co-host Steve Davidson, I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so.
Yeah, so it really is looking like right now that unless a couple of things go Alabama's way, it's looking like their first loss of the year here.
What a thought.
And also a reminder, tomorrow's first NFL game will be, of course, in London, and it is at 9:30. The New York Jets, they take on the Atlanta Falcons in London. God, you know, I feel so bad for London that they just get the worst possible matchups.
Yeah, but
it's weird.
The schedule was out first before the records were showing up.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you're right. You're right. They obviously schedule's out before the season even starts. But you know, you kind of feel bad because you're trying to sell the game of football to British people, and it's not really working the way you want it to.
No. By Joe, you're going to give us this matchup? We want a good matchup. We got these scrubs. Oh, wait, that's not pretty good.
Yeah. But the way, the way that the NFL currently looks
pretty
right
good.
Now, NFC, the NFC West, we got a close race between the Cardinals and the Rams.
Best division.
And You know, this is kind of going back to what I said about Sam Darnold, that maybe the problem was the Jets all along and it wasn't Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing here with Matt Stafford. Maybe the problem wasn't Matt Stafford all along. Maybe it was the Detroit Lions.
Now that's an even bigger joke than the Jets.
Because think about it, you know, you make a one-for-one swap along with draft picks as well, but you make a one-for-one swap, Jared Goff for Matt Stafford. I mean, I understand from L.A.'s point of view, but from Detroit's point of view, what the fuck are you guys thinking?
They weren't thinking. That's the thing. They weren't thinking.
You know, Stafford, I mean – as far from a fantasy football perspective, Stafford is one of the quarterbacks that I would probably always take in fantasy football. He puts up numbers. It's not his fault that you guys can't field a good enough defense.
I mean,
now, you put
joking to the Jets.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, you put him in L.A. with a competent coaching staff and a competent front office, and look at where they are. They're thick in the race right now in the NFC West.
That's division of football.
Niners, you know, Niners are at 2-2. They're going to have a problem probably with Trey Lance now taking the reins for an injured Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, they were having a problem with Garoppolo anyways, even when he was healthy. But they're gonna have an even bigger problem now, you know, with Trey Lance. They haven't really given Lance a whole lot of room to actively compete, you know, to actually compete in games.
Oh, my God. Fumbled and Texas A&M just Alabama actually scored it, so it's not over yet.
Oh, so they did. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Now it's gonna start to get interesting. Now it's gonna start to get interesting.
Yep, we spoke too soon again.
This one just went final, actually. It is UTEP over Southern Missouri. Or is it Southern Mississippi?
I think it's Southern Miss.
Yeah, it's Southern Miss. 26-13 win for UTEP. That has just gone final. And wow, yeah, Alabama. Man, if they start the comeback, you know, this. We talked about Texas blowing a huge lead. This might be potentially bigger.
Yeah, but not a surprise.
No, but still, this might be potentially bigger, though, if A&M somehow blows this lead to Alabama, who very rarely loses, if they do at all.
Oh, you knew Nick was going to give him a pep talk at halftime. Boys, what's going on? Your defense sucks. This is not the team I raised here. What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
So I guess it's pep talking. Like, you know, sometimes a good pep talk in the locker room is all it takes.
That's true.
If we don't,
we've seen plenty of comebacks take place after halftime. So,
yes,
it's never really over until that last minute ticks down. But you know, going back to the NFL, you know, the Niners, they have Trey Lance. The Seattle Seahawks, though, man, oh, man, are they in a world of hurt? Because,
yeah.
I mean, it's one thing for the Niners to be without Garoppolo for a couple of weeks, but the Seahawks, they're already banged up as it is. Now they're going to be without Russell Wilson for potentially up to 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I heard.
After undergoing surgery on a torn tendon in his finger. Basically, worst case scenario, originally they thought it was a strain. Turns out it was a full tear. So he's out 6 to 8 weeks, potentially 6 to 8 weeks, but it's going to be at least a month that he is going to be out. And according to Ian Rapoport, he's reporting from NFL Network that Wilson's finger surgery was more complicated than expected, as he had not just a fracture but also a dislocation of his injured finger in addition to
a
torn tendon. Now, Rapoport,
one thing, but dislocation is another.
Yeah, and he had both.
Mm.
As well as a torn tendon. So now, Rapoport puts the timetable at 6 weeks for a recovery, though Wilson, who is a quick healer, does have a chance to be back sooner. They're looking at a minimum, they say, of 4 weeks, but it could go as high as 8 weeks. And there's the potential that he could return after their week 9 bye week that they have. Until then, they will have Geno Smith. You want to talk about former Jets? They have Geno Smith as their starting quarterback. I mean, you know what a comeback that would be, Lou, if Geno Smith somehow can prove that he can be a bona fide NFL starter once again.
Uh-huh.
And actually do something. Now, I'm not saying, you know, he's going to go on and win every single game for the Seahawks until Wilson gets back. But if he can prove that he can still be, he can be a bona fide starter in the league once again, I think you're probably going to have a few teams that are interested.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
You know, as far, this is a huge loss for the Seattle Seahawks, because it's one thing one thing if you're the 49ers to lose Garoppolo. It's another thing if you're the Seahawks to lose somebody like Wilson, who is miles apart from Garoppolo.
Yes.
Now the NFC North, the Packers.
Garoppolo.
Yeah. Now, the NFC North, the Packers, they lead the way, 3-1. The Bears, they're at 2-2. Obviously, Andy Dalton, he has been benched, or he's injured, but he's also been kind of benched as well. So the starter in Chicago is now Justin Fields for the time being. The Vikings, they're basically, I mean, it's Kirk Cousins. That's all you got to really say about that. And the Lions, they're headed towards Jacksonville territory at this point. The Buccaneers and the Panthers, they are tied for the NFC South currently, with the Buccaneers, based off of tiebreaker, currently hold the top of the NFC South, despite having the same record. The Saints, it looks like Jameis Winston is reverting back to his old form. So, yeah. Have fun with that, New Orleans.
Hey,
your Cowboys. Now that's exactly the type of answer that Texas A&M needed.
And they got it.
And that pretty much takes any momentum that Alabama was building, that pretty much takes all of that momentum out.
It's not sweet home for Alabama this time. Yeah, my boys are doing great. I mean, with Prescott back in his game, this is you know, something that I don't think anybody really expected. I mean, look how many yards he's had in the first four games already. About three games out of the four. He was out 1 week.
Yeah. But, you know, this just proves what, you know, just exactly how big of an impact that the loss of Dak Prescott has on the Cowboys.
Yeah.
You know, so you just have to hope to God that Prescott can stay healthy, because if he stays healthy, the Cowboys are a completely different team.
There's
with
no stopping
him under center. Exactly. Now, I mean, their quarterback depth is even worse than it has been in recent memory. So, if they lose Dak this year, you can almost count the Cowboys out for the entire rest of the season, regardless of whatever their record is. Because they almost have practically no depth behind Dak Prescott.
No.
I mean, yeah, they got Will Greer, but Greer didn't even really do anything during his time in Carolina. So who's to say that he would even do anything in a potential injury situation out there in Dallas? Now over to the AFC, Tennessee, they currently lead the AFC South. Not much of a shock there. Expect Tennessee to probably be the winner coming out of the South. The AFC East, right now, it looks like the Buffalo Bills are running away with it, and I would probably expect them to do so. I'm not really expecting New England to contend for the AFC East. I only expect contend for the wild card, basically. And
I
even
think
then,
see
it's
the
be
end
tough
of the dynasty run with New England now.
I mean, probably. You know, it's to be expected. You know, a lot of their – obviously Brady left, and a lot of their experienced players are getting older. So,
yeah.
You know, they just lost James White, one of their top running backs in recent years, to a hip injury. So – you know, now comes the time for a rebuild, basically. And unfortunately, New England fans, you know, they're just going to have to suffer through it. And, you know, you kind of have to wonder how much longer Belichick is going to stick in the current role that he's in. I mean,
yeah,
I understand, you know, he's not just the head coach, he's also the general manager, but
double trouble.
You know, you almost wonder with how they've been, it seemed like that they had been grooming Josh McDaniels to take over for Belichick once Belichick decides to retire. But you kind of almost have to wonder just how many more years Belichick is going to want to deal with this, if he's going to have to go through a rebuilding process.
I don't know. I don't think he wants to stick around for that long.
No, I wouldn't think so either. I would say if we're going through a rebuild, he has maybe one, two more years. Possibly.
One. I wouldn't give him two.
You wouldn't?
No.
You Now, over to the AFC North, we have a three-way tie right now for first place. We got the Bengals, the Ravens, and the Browns all at 3-1, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are at 1-3. At the same time, we have a three-way tie in the AFC West with the Chargers, the Raiders, and the Broncos all at 3-1.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs at 2-2. I mean, it just seems so weird, Lou. It almost seems we're living in a bizarro world right now for football.
Everything is backwards?
Yeah, where everything is backwards, exactly.
Everything is backwards.
You know, last year, the Steelers were one of the top AFC teams. This year, they're almost close to the bottom. It's like a complete flip took place. I just don't understand it, but
I go with that too.
Yeah, I don't really understand how it could shift that quick. Wow, really, Bryce? A loss of 16 yards. A loss of 16 yards for a pass completion. So granted, I'm a little behind here, but it's 3rd and 26 right now at Alabama's 33. Now it's 3rd and 27, or okay, it's 3rd and 27, not 3rd and 26. Oh wow, just wow. You know, it's almost as if, Lou, that the football gods are speaking tonight.
No, because Alabama just scored a touchdown.
Well, then I just, I think I should probably shut up about this right now, then.
I should be forced to shut up.
But anyways, you know what, Lou? Let's talk about the MLB playoffs because
yes,
we are. I mean, I got to talk about the Yankees Red Sox game first because one of the biggest. Well, first off, I got to talk about John Sterling. He right as soon as Giancarlo Stanton in the first inning had that huge towering hit that almost looked like it was going to be it was going to clear the monster, and it only
yes.
was basically a loud single because Stanton apparently took a whole bunch of time admiring his handiwork, thinking it was automatically gone, not knowing that it was going to drop. And
yeah.
It only hit off the monster for a loud single. And Sterling was kind of shocked. He was like, what happened? Like, he's like, did I see something wrong here? And I forget
yeah,
who was doing the game with him, but but she even agreed with him, saying that it was surely, I could have sworn I had seen him hit a homer, or I could have sworn I had seen him hit a home run.
Was it Sue Waltman?
It probably was.
Oh, that whack job, please. She's even a real Yankee fan. She's a Red Sox fan.
I mean, I thought, at that point, you know, you had Yankee fans going, John, retire, please.
Yeah.
Just please retire. 82
years old.
Yeah. At some point, you know, you just gotta know when to hang it up, basically.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was that. Then there was later on in the game where I don't know why, but Phil Nevin decided to send home Aaron Judge on, I think it was a single or was it a double?
that he decided to send Judge home on a
I think it was a single.
On a hit. And he got thrown out by a mile at the plate.
Yeah. Not a very smart move at all.
And actually, this goes down in the record books, too. It's the first – Aaron Judge becomes the first ever Yankee player to be thrown out on to be thrown out at home on a base hit in Yankee postseason history.
Yeah. A very dubious distinction.
But – It wasn't a good night for Yankee fans. It wasn't a good night for the Yankees overall.
No.
The Yankees ended up dropping the wild card game, and you know you almost have to wonder. This was actually this was brought up as a possibility. First off, Gerrit Cole, he ended up getting the quick hook. He got the hook in what, the third inning, I think.
Yes.
So you almost have to wonder, could heads potentially roll because of this early exit? Do you think, Lou, that you're looking at – do you think we're looking at a potential removal of Aaron Boone, maybe a whole clearing out of the entire coaching staff?
It wouldn't surprise me at all, to be honest. I really think that, you know, we've seen the last of Boone in a as Yankee manager. I mean, he hasn't taken beyond, you know, getting even past the league championship in his 4 years, though he has taken a place every year, but Yankee management doesn't go for that. They want World Series or bust, and he's not doing it. I wasn't so sure he was the right man for the job anyway going into it, but we see the last of him.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, too, this year it really looked like they had the team to go all the way. You know, they acquired Anthony Rizzo. They acquired Joey Gallo at the deadline. Yeah. Yeah, the Yankees made moves with the World Series in mind. They made improvements, but there was still that very questionable decision-making by Aaron Boone. That really stuck out amongst all of the Yankee games following the deadline. I mean, yeah, they went on a huge run in terms of a winning streak, but after that, basically, this shouldn't have come down to a last day thing.
Yeah,
that they needed a win on the final day of the season in order to make the playoffs. This shouldn't have come down to that. They should have been locked in with the way that they were playing at around the deadline. They should have been locked in into at least a wild card spot, not having to worry about potentially missing the playoffs. I have a feeling, Lou, this is just me, but I agree with you, and I have a feeling, you know, we may have seen the last of Aaron Boone as Yankee manager.
Yeah.
And also, I will say it doesn't help either that they lost DJ LeMahieu earlier in the week either. So I think that also had a little part to play with the Yankees missing out and losing to the Red Sox in the wild card game.
Right.
But you know, I think there's definitely changes that are going to be made. We do have obviously the currently the playoffs are ongoing. We have, if I can bring up the, they don't have the brackets up for some reason. Okay, but we do have the. Currently two games, or one game is currently ongoing. A game that was earlier today, the Atlanta Braves, they took game two over the Milwaukee Brewers 3-0 to tie the series up at one apiece. The Dodgers, they currently lead the Giants 2-1 in the bottom of the fourth, but the Giants are threatening. in the bottom of the fourth here. The Giants currently lead their series 1-0. Last night we had four games take place. Yes. In particular, the Boston Red Sox, they rebounded from a game one loss to defeat the Tampa Bay Rays 14-6 to tie the series up at 1-1. And the Houston Astros beat the Chicago White Sox 9-4 after it was tied 4-4 going into the seventh inning. With Houston taking a 2-0 lead against Chicago, they can wrap it up tomorrow night, potentially, if they beat the White Sox in Chicago. So that's going to be a game to watch. Actually, let's see. Yeah, the Rays and Red Sox, they play game three at Fenway tomorrow at 4:07. And it's, you know, I got to say, Lou, I am kind of shocked right now that with the way that the postseason began for the Red Sox, with game one against Tampa, and I mean, it just looked disastrous almost for the Red Sox. I was anticipating, after how they were manhandled by Tampa in game one, McClanahan, he pitched a pretty good outing for the Rays. But I was almost expecting that we were probably gonna see a 3-0 sweep for the Tampa Bay Rays. So I was kind of surprised that. Now wait a minute, it is a best of five, right, for the divisional series?
Yes.
Okay, I thought so. I thought it was, because I know the wild card used to be a best of three, then the divisional series was a best of five, and then it became a best of seven once you got to the ALCS and NLCS. Okay, so it is still that then. You know, I really thought that Tampa Bay was going to sweep Boston in three, considering the fact that Boston didn't have J.D. Martinez and... I mean, just quite frankly, they just didn't show up, it seemed, to game one. But even though Chris Sale got hammered with a grand slam in the first inning last night, I was really surprised to see Boston rally around, like they did. And they ended up coming back and pretty much limiting Tampa to only two more runs the entire rest of the way.
Yeah.
Now, Houston against the White Sox, I mean, there was only so far that the White Sox pitching would take them. And
yes,
they're running into a buzzsaw right now that is the Houston Astros offense. So, you know, I think Houston probably closes it out tomorrow. San Francisco in LA. It does, yeah. But San Francisco in LA, this is what pisses me off about the wild card is
that I was gonna say that.
If you have a team like LA who won how many games? Over 100 games?
107 and 106.
107 or 106, and they're the winner of the wild card, and now they have to face another 100-win team in the first round?
Right. Yeah, I know. I was asking earlier, should it be a realignment? But the majority of the crowd said no.
Honestly, I think it should. I think, you know,
yes,
how they do it with the the tiebreaker for the wild card, where teams got to choose who they would want to face. If, say, there was a four-way tie for the wild card, the Yankees, they wanted to face Boston. If it ended up being a four-way tie, they wanted to face Boston for the opportunity to then face the winner of Toronto and Seattle. I honestly think that it should be, if you get the number one seed overall in the National League or the American League, you should have the option to choose who you want to face off against in the first round.
Yeah.
But the fact that, I mean, it's just a shame that we have 200-plus win teams facing off against each other here in the first round. When this should be an NLCS matchup, not an NLDS matchup.
I would say that tonight, yes.
I mean, what are your thoughts, Lou? Because it just seems so ridiculous to me that this is how.
I would say that tonight. You know, Atlanta got in because they're part of a pathetic division again. I mean, the NL East did it again. You know, they were the only team that was even worse than in contention since they had a winning record. And they got the division. Well, you got the Giants and Dodgers who do twice as better. And one is going to the wild card and one is going to be out. They really need to realign for the playoff structure because this is an injustice. It really is.
Yeah. You know, it just literally, it doesn't make sense why it's lined up the way that it is. I mean, I understand the wild card is technically considered the lowest seed. But at the same time,
right.
You know, you potentially have a matchup like this where you have two dominant teams in the same division, and obviously both teams can't win the division. One has to win the division and one has to be the wild card. So,
yeah,
you know, it just. And obviously there's no way that they can realign themselves so that they're in different divisions because both of them are in California. So there's not really any way that they can move on from the NL West, either one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they gotta do something. Either maybe allow the team to whoever wins the first seed in their conference to choose who they want to face off against in the first round. But I mean, I honestly think that baseball fans are being robbed here of a potential huge matchup that in an NLCS could very possibly go seven games.
Yes.
And, you know, honestly, I really do feel that, you know, normally I would say that L.A. would come back here, but I don't know. There's something just seems really weird about this year's Giants team.
You ain't kidding.
For them to all of a sudden break out like they have and have such a huge year after numerous down years. It just kind of really seems to me like this is going to be they have the potential to go all the way this year.
They do. No question about it.
The Braves and the Brewers, you know, this series could really go either way. I mean, both teams are very, very versatile and very, you know, they've dealt with multiple setbacks this year, so this series could really go either way. I honestly don't even know who I'd have taken this series. Going back to Boston and Tampa Bay, you know, I originally, like I said, after game one, I thought Tampa was going to take the series 3-0, but now that Boston has evened it up, and assuming they didn't blow their entire offense last night, considering they have Nate Eovaldi going in game three tomorrow with how hot he was against the Yankees, assuming he continues the rate of postseason play that he because keep in mind, Nate Eovaldi, a couple of years ago, he was huge for the Red Sox in the postseason when it came – in particular to the ALCS as well as the World Series. So I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility if we don't see another huge performance from him tomorrow against the Rays. But, you know, so I think the biggest problem that the Rays have is the fact that they don't really have – I mean, they have a starting rotation, but, you know, their ace is out for the year. He's on injured reserve, Tyler Glasnow. A lot of their veterans have been more on – you know, they've been more in the bullpen as opposed to actually in the rotation. So they're dealing with a lot of inexperienced rookies who have never played in the playoffs this year or, you know, for their rotation this year. So I think obviously the Red Sox, they have the edge there when it comes to starting pitching. The only thing is,
yes.
Can their offense show up on a consistent basis? Like, can we get another night like we did last night? If they can, then I think that Boston could potentially win this series.
Yeah,
because Tampa is gonna score runs. The only thing is, can Boston match Tampa?
That's difficult.
That's a difficult question, yeah. Because if they can't, they're gonna have a hard time if they're gonna expect to stay in the race here in the ALDS. And also, the Tampa Bay Rays, according to Ken Rosenthal, they may be without one of their top relievers, Matt Weisler, who re-aggravated a right middle finger injury in last night's loss to the Red Sox. It says here that the Rays might be forced to make a roster move to replace him ahead of tomorrow's matchup. And it would be a huge loss for their bullpen because he emerged as a key component of their bullpen but missed time back in mid-August due to a right finger inflammation, the same exact finger that he is dealing with here. So it sounds like the Rays may be forced to replace him. We will probably know as early as maybe midnight tonight, actually.
That's soon, huh?
Probably, with the game being at 4 tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, New York, the Yankees, one of their outfielders, Ryan Lamar, he decided to elect free agency after refusing an outright minor league assignment, so he will search for a new opportunity this offseason. He only played in 9 games this year for the Yankees, hitting .190 with 2 homers and 1 stolen base across 24 plate appearances this season for the Yankees. Let's see. The Pirates have fired third base coach Joey Cora, the older brother of Red Sox manager Alex Cora. He had been with the Pirates for the last 5 seasons since 2017, and he's the latest longtime assistant to be let go as the Pirates transition into an extensive rebuild under their current general manager Ben Cherington. Now, I know that Alex tried to get Joey to join him potentially when Cora came to Boston. Maybe,
yeah.
Perhaps that could potentially happen now. Maybe. By the way, Lou, don't look now, but Alabama has pulled to within 4 points.
I know.
31-27.
I'm not surprised.
Let's see. According to The Athletic, the Chicago Cubs, they are expected to name a new general manager soon, possibly before the conclusion of the divisional round. Among the final candidates are Carlos Rodriguez from the Tampa Bay Rays, Jeremy Zoll from the Minnesota Twins, Carter Hawkins from the Cleveland Indians, as well as James Harris, also from the Cleveland Indians, are among the final candidates for consideration under the role of as general manager. And they obviously will be tasked, have the monumental task of rebuilding this Cubs roster that only won a World Series not too long ago.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Some NBA news. Jaylen Brown, he was listed as out for tonight's game against the Raptors, which, by the way, the Boston Celtics did beat the Toronto Raptors 113-111.
Yeah.
Granted, it's preseason. It is preseason, but it is something to keep an eye on because you get to see how teams are going to function potentially this year. The New York Knicks, they had a 117-99 victory over the Washington Wizards. And the Atlanta Hawks with a 91-87 victory over the Memphis Grizzlies. But Jaylen Brown, he is out with COVID. He tested positive earlier this week. He is currently in the league's health and safety protocols, which means he is likely done for the preseason, and it is now unclear if he will be ready for opening night on Wednesday, October 20th. As it
probably
now,
not.
The timetable hinges on his vaccination status, from what it sounds like. And speaking of people and vaccination statuses, the NBA's latest diva, Kyrie Irving, he has officially been cleared to practice on Brooklyn's home court, according to Shams Charania of The Athletic, as New York City has determined that the Brooklyn Nets practice facility, the HSS Training Center, is a private office building, and it gives him the all clear to practice. However, the clearance, though, does not extend to the Barclays Center, so he is still ineligible for home games until he fulfills the vaccine requirement.
Yeah, maybe talk to Drake about it. Oh boy.
And by the way, we talked about this last week. Andrew Wiggins did get the vaccine, so he is officially available to start in the home opener for the Golden State
people.
Warriors. I mean, it's not that tough of a decision. You're getting paid all this, especially if you're a pro basketball star like Kyrie Irving. You're getting paid all this money. You're getting paid all this money to play. You're not getting paid all this money to bitch and complain and to be basically a fucking diva like he has been the past couple of years.
Right. Not just you, but fucking you. Wow.
All you got to do is just do what the NFL or what the NBA wants you to do.
Yes. Or to put it bluntly like this, don't be a pussy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what you're being. But then again, he is a diva, and that's what makes you being a pussy.
So
Gary Ellington from the ultimate diva of all, Dennis Rodman, because he was the biggest diva in the NBA. Duh.
Yeah, and obviously that's the one thing that that if anything it causes a big distraction for your team. The longer that you continue to act the way that he's acting. So, but, there's still obviously, considering there's a certain time frame, he obviously won't be able to play in the home opener. Yeah. And you know, you almost have to wonder how much longer is Brooklyn going to put up with this?
Not much.
Because it almost seems like he becomes
a very
prop,
thin line,
you know,
Steve.
You know, he was a problem in so many teams. He was a problem with Cleveland. Well, later on in his career, that is, with Cleveland. He was a problem in Boston, and now he's going to be a problem, or he's starting to be a problem, I should say, with Brooklyn. At some point, maybe you kind of have to wonder, maybe I'm the problem. Maybe none of my team, maybe none of the teams I've played for are the problem. Maybe it's just me.
It's you.
But
you're too much of an idiot to admit it, so that's what happened.
Yeah. Anyways, JB, welcome to the show.
Oh, hey, Jimmy.
We have officially added you on here.
Okay.
Good evening.
We've been discussing quite a whole bunch of topics here. Hopefully, by the way, hopefully my phone keeps me connected and I don't get disconnected like I did close to the overtime. You know, JB, not a lot of people knew about this, but I almost got, you know, the Survivor show almost didn't go into the third hour because I was having problems trying to reconnect onto the podcast
okay.
on Thursday night because
well.
Blog Talk for some reason decided to, you know, for some reason I got disconnected and I was trying to call back in and Blog Talk like literally was not connecting me whatsoever.
It was one of them situations that happened like about a couple months ago.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happened on multiple occasions, actually, because I remember you and Jim were on the I think it was a Friday night show, and we were having problems
late at night.
Just trying to – It was one of those late at night shows, wasn't it?
Okay.
I think.
Now I can't remember.
But anyways,
well, it happened here too.
You know, it also happened here as well. That there's been a. There has been problems before where I've actually had to play music while I try to reconnect myself in the middle of a podcast here. And it's just hopefully it stays up here for the full hour, the full extra hour here. but you know what? One of the topics that I wanted to bring up tonight as well, obviously there is a huge boxing fight live on pay-per-view tonight. The trilogy fight between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. Currently, I believe, obviously, it looks like it's Tyson Fury's titles that will be on the line tonight. And currently it's 1-0-1, the record is for Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder, with their first matchup being a split draw. And the second matchup, Tyson Fury knocked out Deontay Wilder in the seventh round. And Fury has gone even further to say, I'll knock you out in the third this time. And I mean, there's been a lot of shit talk going on between these two. in the lead up to this trilogy fight, and what's expected to go down actually as one of the many trilogies that have taken place in the sport of boxing, in boxing's history. But right now, it looks like all the betting money is being placed on Tyson Fury tonight.
Oh, it is 85%.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was around 85 to 89% or something like that.
Yep.
Deontay Wilder, and honestly, you know, I kind of agree. I don't see how Wilder is going to be able to beat Fury when Fury seems, even though he had that extended layoff like he did from 2015 after defeating Vladimir Klitschko. You know, he had that extended layoff from 2015 to 2018. He seemingly has improved drastically with each and every fight that he's had, in between each and every fight. And considering he already knows how Wilder is going to approach him, I don't see how Wilder takes the win here tonight. I just don't. What are your thoughts first, Lou, on this fight? Do you think that Wilder can take the rematch? Can take the rubber match here?
No, I don't think so. I think this is Fury's fight all the way.
I mean, I would be very surprised, considering they just met up in February of 2020.
Right.
That's how I thought.
What are your
too.
Thoughts, JB? What are your
That's
thoughts?
That's how
JB?
I thought the same thing. Even though I'm not really into this Wilder Fury, I thought you know, when you said most of the betting was on Fury, I was thinking, you know, with what I was just the little bit that I was reading, and I wasn't really getting into it. And it's like, well, with the little bit that I was reading, it's like, you know, most of it sounds like, you know, Tyson Fury. Back with Deontay Wilder.
And the thing is, these are the heavyweights. These are the big boys.
Yeah.
You know, we're almost guaranteed. We're almost guaranteed to potentially see a knockout tonight.
I think it's TKO.
That's probably what it'll be. More than likely, it'll probably be a TKO. But still, it's, you know, these are the heavy hitters. Basically, this entire card has been all heavy hitters. From top to bottom. As a matter of fact, Edgar Berlanga, who fought earlier tonight on ESPN, he almost lost with Koceris basically knocking his ass to the mat for the first time in his entire career.
Yeah.
But luckily, though, Berlanga was able to win by unanimous decision, 96-93 on all three cards. I believe we just got finished with Sanchez and Ajagba, I think, because some of the results from earlier, Jared Anderson, he defeated Vladimir Tereshkin by second-round knockout, or TKO, actually. Robert Hellenius defeated Adam Konacki by a six-round DQ due to low blows. And they had, obviously, next on the card is Sanchez and Ajagba. And right now, Tyson Fury is a 270 favorite to win over Deontay Wilder, who is 220, as far as betting odds go. So,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people are anticipating that we're probably going to, you know, we're probably going to see Tyson Fury take the rubber fight here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I wasn't really that impressed, honestly, with what we've seen from Wilder in his recent fights. So, it's, you know, it really wouldn't be that much of a shock to me if Fury ends up taking this third fight. Now, they each received, for their previous fight, they had a guaranteed $5 million just to start off with. Though, apparently, both fighters had more than $25 million in guaranteed earnings, but their base purses were $5 million apiece. Plus, they got percentages of the pay-per-view profits as well. So they ended up making just a guaranteed base purse of $5 million each for that second fight. So imagine what they're going to be making for this third fight.
In the millions, of course. The multi-millions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's probably going to be a substantial amount that we're looking
at. Oh, yeah.
And actually, this just in, Sanchez, he did win by unanimous decision over Efe Ajagba. He keeps his WBC Continental Americas and WBO NABO heavyweight titles with the win over Ajagba. Now, obviously, that just leaves the main event, Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder. That will be for the WBC and the ring heavyweight titles that Fury had taken from Wilder in their previous fight. Now, for both men, Tyson Fury, he weighed in at 277 for this fight. Deontay Wilder, he weighed in at 238. At their career heaviest weights for both fighters. Tyson Fury, obviously, or as they call him, the Gypsy King, comes into this fight with a record undefeated, 30-0-1, with 21 knockouts to his credit. 6'9", orthodox fighter. Deontay Wilder, though, 42-1-1 record, with the only loss coming at the hands of Tyson Fury, with 41 knockouts to his credit. Stands 6'7". He's also an orthodox fighter as well. So this is going to be a pretty interesting main event that we're gonna be seeing take place here. You know, a lot of people are considering this actually to be one of the big trilogies that they've had in boxing.
What? No play.
Which I don't know about though, because I mean, hell, we've had trilogies before that.
Right, of course.
You know, a lot better than this one.
Yeah. That, you know, I mean, just to name one, for example, Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward, you know, is one to bring up. Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran.
Oh, of course.
You know, we also had Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier.
Don't want Frazier.
You know, it's just I don't really think that Fury and Wilder stacks up with some of the other, you know,
it's
some of the other trilogies.
Gentlemen.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. It probably is a generational thing. So obviously, you know, it's completely different as opposed to what you would see from you know, people who got the chance to see other trilogies, what they would probably think about this matchup between these two. But, I mean, the thing is, it would be different if it was one and one. But, I mean, Tyson Fury took the second fight, and they had a controversial – granted, they had a controversial draw in the first bout between the two.
Very controversial.
So, you know, I just – you know, I'm looking it up right now. They had a split decision draw. A Mexican judge, Alejandro Rochin, scored the first fight, 115 to 111 for Wilder. Canadian judge Robert Tapper had it 114 to 112 for Fury. And British judge Phil Edwards had it a 13-13 draw. Or, I mean, 113-113 draw.
Except for the British.
Now, what's weird is during the first fight, and this is what's controversial, is that Fury used his unorthodox stance, spent much of the fight using upper and lower body movement to avoid Wilder's big shots to stay out of range. Fury made Wilder miss most of his big swings. However, in round four, Wilder bloodied Fury's nose with his stiff jabs, but was unable to follow up on his attacks. Fury ended up switching to southpaw and had success backing Wilder against the ropes and at the same time staying cautious of his power. And after trading jabs in the seventh round, which saw Fury come out on top, Fury landed a counter right hand and then quickly tied Wilder up before he could throw anything back. Round eight saw back-and-forth action between the two. Round nine, Wilder actually dropped Fury with a short left hook. This may be where it was considered a draw, because I guarantee you Fury probably could have won had he not gotten dropped. And Wilder looked fatigued in round 10 after expending a lot of energy to try and finish Fury in round 9. Fury then took advantage in round 11, landing enough shots and avoiding anything Wilder could throw at him. Fury got knocked down again in round 12. And the crowd, commentary team, as well as Deontay Wilder, believed that the fight was over. The referee looked at Fury on the canvas and began giving him a count. Fury surprisingly beat the count. And it seemed like Fury was able to recover and land some right hands to finish the round and the fight on his feet after Wilder basically was fatigued after that last exchange. And according to the CompuBox statistics, Wilder landed 71 of 430 punches thrown. Fury had 84 of 327 thrown. So it was 17% to 26%. And Fury had outlanded Wilder in 9 of the 12 rounds. So that's what's so controversial of this, is that he outlanded Wilder most of the fight, but yet one of the judges still gave it to Wilder in such a huge fashion to where it was 115 to 111. While the Canadian judge had it to Fury 114 to 112. And for some reason, I guess just for the laughs, the British judge had it as a draw.
Of course.
So I can kind of see, you know, where the controversy was. I guess maybe that's why they're giving this a trilogy fight. But, I mean, if you win by knockout in the second fight, or technical knockout technically, considering the first fight was a draw, doesn't that kind of make the statement there as far as to who the better
yes.
fighter was?
Yeah, I would think so.
Maybe it's just that they see this as a money fight. So, you know,
yeah.
they've decided, okay, let's just, you know, this is a money fight. Let's put it together. Let's make it happen. Even though Fury won decisively in the second fight. But I just, honestly, from everything I've watched leading up to tonight, I just don't see how Wilder will be able to keep up with Fury. As Fury, it seems like he consistently evolves with each fight that he goes through. But anyways, that is that's coming up at some point within the next little bit here. Let's see. Oh, you know what? Here's another thing that we should talk about, Lou. What are your
yes.
thoughts on the Cowboys getting rid of Jalen Smith?
Oh boy. Just when we thought everything was going smoothly our way, this has to happen. So, but you know, we
by
have
the way, the
our offense. Yeah.
Real quick, the money line is now 310 for Fury, as opposed to 250 for Wilder.
Oh dear.
But anyways, continue on, Lou.
I don't have anything to worry about. I mean, Dax is having a good game. I think we're showing some strides here, so you know I'm not too concerned about it. They didn't want to pay him, so he just had to go.
You know, he is. I mean, obviously he's gonna get the money that the Cowboys were supposed to give him because of the fact he got flat out released, but he only
obviously.
Signed. He only signed with the Packers for $770,000.
Wow. Cheapo. Mm.
That's all he signed for because he's getting all that money from Dallas.
Oh, that's why he went to the Chiefs game plan. Okay.
But, you know, honestly, this just makes Green Bay even better. While, I mean, even though he was having a down year with Dallas, you know, their defense is kind of hurting a little bit.
Yes.
So, you know, it may turn out that they could have potentially used him in the long run here. But, JB... Lou and I talked about this earlier. I want to get your thoughts. The Seattle Seahawks, they lost mm-hmm. Russell Wilson for potentially up to 2 months with surgery that he had to have on his finger. Do you think that Seattle could potentially, come back with Geno Smith as their quarterback, or is this potentially a season-ending injury for the Seattle Seahawks?
Looking at it, it's all going to wet part of the finger, and I didn't really read.
Yeah.
You know, it's all going to what part of the finger it is, and if it's just a finger. And I don't know what finger it is, too.
It was the right. It was
I
the
can,
right middle.
Oh,
is he right-handed?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's his throwing.
I know.
Hand,
I'm not.
Or his throwing hand.
Ooh. I can still see him
from?
Come. I can still see him coming back. Or the season's over.
I mean, they're saying best case scenario is considering they say he's a quick healer, that he could potentially come back as early as 4 months. Or, I mean, four weeks. But
that wouldn't surprise me.
A lot of people are looking at potentially 6 weeks. Ooh, this is going to get interesting here. I may be a bit behind here, but Alabama looks like they're about to score.
Yeah.
They just did score.
That's why I haven't been saying anything. I've been watching this Alabama game.
So have I.
JB, how shocked are you that Texas A&M had basically Alabama on the ropes for pretty much the entire game?
Touchdown, Alabama.
Well,
yeah,
now it's
I saw
A&M
that.
That's on the ropes.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all.
I was kind of surprised at the score. Because I was looking at the first quarter, and it was like 17-7. And I thought, whoa, Alabama's going to have to come back somehow.
Yeah, like where the hell did this come from?
But they've been kicking the shit out of Texas A&M this second half.
Yeah, it just seemed really weird that Alabama was struggling so much against Texas A&M when usually, I mean, they own the SEC. It's here we go. Now it's 38-31. So A&M needs to respond here like they did the last Alabama touchdown. But you know, this we were talking about potentially Texas having the biggest blown game. I think this may be the biggest one. Now, with with Texas A&M blowing the golden opportunity that they've had to, you know, to beat one of the
getaway,
if not the college in college football.
Yeah, on their own turf too.
Wait, no, I they were playing on Texas A&M. They were playing at Texas A&M, not at Bama.
I meant. You know, it's, a big blow for Texas A&M being their plan, and they were at one time beating Alabama, you know, on their own turf. And I thought, that's really going to, those fans are really going to go, ape shit.
Yeah,
no question about it.
By the way, it looks like this is about to go final. Utah, with about 52 seconds left, they are currently leading USC 42-26. And it looks like that is probably about to go final any minute now.
Goodbye, USC. I picked USC. Oh, well.
In ball or not, JB, that ruins your perfect week bid.
Oh, I thought with the first three games that I had, what was it? Ohio State. Who else did I pick?
Oh, wow. Michigan just barely covered. Actually, it's a push. Michigan and Nebraska. Michigan favored by 3. Michigan just barely covers.
I was almost going to pick that, and I was going to pick Nebraska.
Actually, no, never mind. You lost with Oregon State.
Yeah. Oregon State and Washington State.
Actually, it looks like headed into Monday Night Football, you're going to be 3-3. Because Alabama, they're favored by 17.5. and yet
yeah, forget
they're having such a hard time. They're having such a hard time against you know, Texas A&M. So that's a pretty big shocker right there. Let's see. Do we have anything? Notre Dame. They beat Virginia Tech 32-29. Kentucky with a 42-21 victory over LSU. And, it looks like that Utah score is about to become final because that's, I mean, hell, they're driving right down USC's turf right now. So that's not going to be that's going to be a final in just a bit here.
Oh, I crossed that off at the half.
Yeah.
I said, forget it.
Yeah. Let's see. We do have, Lou, obviously, with the NHL starting things back up, the score actually put together, the score from Canada, they put together a list of teams who may, of coaches who may be on the chopping block heading into this season. Four coaches in particular. We got Dallas Eakins from the Ducks, which obviously nobody expects anything from Anaheim this season. And it looks like that it's possible he may just finish out his contract before they decide to move on to somebody else and provide a new voice for the team. But Eakins is expected to be on the bubble. I wouldn't be shocked, actually, it says here, if he potentially gets dismissed mid-season. Sure. Jeff Blashill of the rebuilding Red Wings is also on an expiring expiring deal. And it says he'll have to make a noticeable impact this season to be re-upped in Hockey Town. John Hines of the Nashville Predators. John Hines of the Nashville Predators says here they're basically staring a rebuild in the face, which kind of makes sense because they've been underperforming for so many years, and their stars are very, very overpaid. I mean, hell, you got their former player from Columbus making $8 million a season to put up lackluster stats, Ryan Johansson to put up lackluster stats. And it looks like if this is the year that the Predators unravel, that John Hines will likely be the scapegoat and will likely take it out of, he'll likely be the one to be fired as opposed to the general manager or something. They also named Bob Boner. I think that's how you pronounce it. Bougher of the San Jose Sharks as a possibility to be on the hot seat. As says here, if he can't rally his club to outperform their California rivals or the new Seattle Kraken, he will probably be on his way out after possessing a decent amount of quality players, yet still not being a playoff threat the last two seasons.
What are we looking with the Kraken here? Are we thinking it could be like another Golden Knights story, or not really?
You know, I would not be shocked at all.
Look at this.
Oh, we got something?
We got a game. We got a game here, gentlemen.
Oh, boy. Texas A&M, they are not going quietly.
No.
Their quarterback is down, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, because, you know, they've done so well in preseason and, you know, doing right nicely. So I'm thinking, is it going to be another repeat of, like, a Golden Knights story that just happened, you know, just a few years ago?
It's possible. I mean, Grubauer is their starting goaltender. You know, we saw how well he was for the Colorado Avalanche for so many years. And when you take a look at who they got in free agency, they picked up Jaden Schwartz. They ended up, I mean, obviously, like I said, they signed Grubauer. They got Jaden Schwartz. I mean, you just take a look at their roster in general. Some of the names that stick out to me, Ryan Donato from the Minnesota Wild, Chris Driedger, who would be a very good backup, Vince Dunn,
yes,
very underrated from the St. Louis Blues. I'm kind of surprised that St. Louis didn't protect him. Jordan Eberle from the New York Islanders. You know, he seems to have had a resurgence over the past couple of years since leaving Edmonton. You got a young defenseman in Hayden Fleury. You got a veteran defenseman in Mark Giordano from the Calgary Flames, who still is probably one of the best defensemen in the league. They got some pretty solid players here. A good mixture of young and veteran players that, honestly, I could potentially see them being a contender. I mean, now, I don't know if they would be a contender. I could see them being a contender for a playoff spot. I don't know if they would be a contender for a Stanley Cup this year.
Uh-huh.
But... you know, that's another thing. They got Yanni Gourde as well. And they played well in the preseason. And Yanni Gourde, I don't think he even played because he's still recovering from his injury that he suffered at the end of the Tampa Bay Lightning's playoff run.
Yes.
So, I mean, he's gonna easily be one of their top scorers, more than likely. But, you know, you take a look at that roster, at the roster that they currently have, and I really do see some potential. It does honestly kind of look like the Vegas Golden Knights, first year, when everybody was looking at Vegas and everybody was saying there's no shot in hell with this type of roster that Vegas is going to make a run for it. And we saw what ended up happening.
Yeah, I mean, nobody was really thinking that.
No. And, you know, like I said, you saw what happened in Vegas. So it would not shock me at all, especially with them having Dave Haxtell as their head coach.
Yes.
You know, He led the Flyers to the playoffs 2 out of the 4 years that he was in Philly.
Right.
He never had really a losing season with the exception of his final year where he got fired after 31 games with a 12-15-4 record. But otherwise, I mean, his first year he had 96 points. Second year they missed the playoffs with 88 points. Third year, they made the playoffs again with 98, but they ended up losing in the first round. Both appearances, they lost in the first round in 6 games, first to Washington and then to Pittsburgh. So, I mean, overall, you know, his head coaching record in the NHL is 134, 101, and 42. So, I think it's possible that maybe we could potentially see a run, because this is sort of similar to Gerard Gallant with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yes.
The same sort of type of record that Gallant had before he became the head coach of the Golden Knights during their first year. So I would not be shocked at all if Seattle can make some noise this first year. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to be an immediate contender, but if they can at least make some noise, that'll you know, that'll perk up some interested players potentially in free agency. You know, maybe this could be a good first step year for Seattle.
It could be,
but
yeah.
You know, it should be very interesting because, I mean, right now, you know, he's listed as obviously a newcomer. So obviously with a new coach, you know, you're not really expecting new coaches aren't going to get fired in their very first year. It takes a special kind of stupid to be able to do that. Speaking of Gerard Gallant, you know, he's the new head coach for the New York Rangers now. So we're going to be able to see if he can push the up-and-coming Rangers officially into the playoffs for the first time in what seems like forever. You also have other new head coaches. You have other new head coaches like Brad Larsen of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Dominique Ducharme of the Canadiens, even though he made the finals last year, he's still technically somewhat of a newcomer. You got Andre Tarigny for the Coyotes, Don Granato for the Sabres, Daryl Sutter for the Flames, which for a lot of people, it's a make or break year for the Flames. Because a lot of people believe that they have the talent to make a playoff run, but it's possible that this could be, if they can't get something done this year, they may just break up that entire squad, and that will start with Johnny Gaudreau, their number one forward. There are only two coaches that are listed as not going anywhere, where basically the only way that they will be leaving their teams is on their own accord. Those two coaches are the back-to-back Stanley Cup winner John Cooper of the Tampa Bay Lightning and Barry Trotz of the New York Islanders, as he has the Islanders on the cusp of a potential championship. So there's no way in hell that they're going to get rid of him at any point in time. So he thinks, yeah, but still, it's clear that the Islanders have played so much better ever since he became the head coach.
Oh, I'll give you that. No question about it.
Yeah. Ever since he became the head coach, they've been miles better compared to where they were on previous years. Let's see. For players that are listed as safe due to their reputation, Bruce Cassidy for the Boston Bruins, he's 194, 82, and 41 with a trip to the Stanley Cup Final, as well as a Coach of the Year Award since becoming head coach of Boston. So he's likely not going to go anywhere. Rod Brind'Amour for the Hurricanes. He did just win the Coach of the Year Award, and he also signed a contract extension.
First down.
Oh, boy. Yep, looking
at it.
We got
an half left, guys.
Yeah, this is wow. Are we really going to see A&M take it in the last minute here?
Oh, is my co-host going to be kicked off next week?
I want to see him beat Alabama. I really do. Even though I like Alabama.
Yeah. Whoa. $50 million bet was just placed on Wilder by Knockout.
Whoa.
You gave me $50
million. I repeat, $50 million bet to try and win $175 million on Deontay Wilder by knockout.
Yeah.
Getting really good.
Wow.
And if you lose, then you're really screwed.
Yeah, you're pretty much wasting away money, essentially. You know, A&M, they are in field goal territory. A&M is in field goal territory. They could just run out the clock almost here.
Yeah. Honestly, being the fact that if you did that, you were just a complete imbecile anyway.
Man, oh man.
Ah, you dummy. Greg!
Oh? Wow. I can't believe we're looking at this right now.
You can't believe it, neither can I.
I mean, obviously, unless A&M fucks it up here in the last 30 seconds or so.
That's a magic word.
Oh, yeah, no. With DPI, with DPI on the 12th.
You know it's against Alabama.
Well, obviously. I mean, this is their golden opportunity to finally give Alabama a loss.
Yeah, their second one too.
Because everybody looks at Alabama as a the team that can't be beaten. So,
well, they've already been beaten once.
No, they're 5-0.
This will be their second one.
No, they're 5-0. This will be.
I thought they were 4-1. I thought they were 4-1.
No.
Nope, they're 5-0. This would be their first loss of the season. And Lou and I talked about this earlier. You're probably looking at you're probably looking at Georgia taking the number one spot with Iowa probably going number two.
And I picked Georgia to win it all too.
Well, you know, like we mentioned last week, Georgia definitely has the schedule to where they could finish the season undefeated, at least heading into the SEC title game, that is.
Here we go.
Here we are.
Yep, 1 second to go.
Round the upset.
This is it.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
Wow. To think that Alabama, Jesus, I cannot believe that Alabama, normally they don't have this amount of problems. They don't have this big of a problem normally with Texas A&M. And tonight A&M just delivered.
Yeah.
But now this completely changes the rankings, period.
Oh, I really screwed up.
You know, you want to talk about a shakeup. You're definitely looking at a shakeup now at this point.
How far down do you think Alabama's going to go, though? Do you think they'll go down to fifth or maybe third?
You know, I don't think they fall out of the top five.
I don't think
they fall out of the top five.
No, uh-uh. No, I don't think so either.
But I think it'd be as far as maybe like number four.
I would say, maybe three or four. I still think Cincinnati may take three.
No, I don't.
You don't think so?
No. as much as I'm a Bearcats fan and I see how high they're ranked, it's like some of the teams that are ranked lower than the Bearcats would just whoop the Bearcats' ass. It's like if the Bearcats played Arkansas would whoop their butt. I think so. I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it might be like,
you know how the rankings go. You know, they usually do things based off of record as opposed to, you know, who would actually win against certain teams and whatnot. They usually go more based off of record.
They do.
It looks like the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder fight is set to start any moment now. According to Twitter, they got the walkouts going right now. But let's see. Do we have any other finals right now? We got Tulsa right now over Memphis, 21-13. San Diego State over New Mexico, 31-7. I still can't believe A&M over Alabama. That right there is perhaps the biggest shocker of the entire week.
It ought to be.
Notre Dame over Virginia Tech.
Right.
Wait, that's just the top 25. Let's see.
How about
UCLA
Utah over USC?
Well, considering Utah's issues that they've had this year, yeah, I would consider that a bit of an upset, considering the problems that Utah has had this year.
This is a bigger upset, though, I think.
You think so?
Texas A&M over Alabama, yeah.
I thought you were talking about Utah and USC. I was going to say what?
No.
It's an upset, but it's not as big an upset as this one.
Yeah, no. It's definitely. I mean, A&M over Alabama. They had Alabama favored by. I looked at the spread document 17, once again.
Mm-hmm.
17 and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, that basically tells you right there that a lot of people didn't even have any, or the bookies didn't have any faith whatsoever in Texas A&M.
And they get the whole state of Texas out on the field. Well, everybody in the stadium. Almost.
Yeah. You know, they're probably going to get fined for the fans storming the field, though.
No question about that.
Like Arkansas
really.
Did. Arkansas got fined when the fans stormed the field a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous. It's the end of a game. Let the fans celebrate. I mean, especially
as long
Texas
as nobody
A&M.
Gets hurt, I don't see any problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, especially Texas A&M, who, you know, is currently unranked. And literally nobody gave them a chance, period.
Yeah.
So at least, you know, at least give them the chance to
exactly
to actually be able to celebrate.
Let them enjoy the moment.
Yeah, just like Arkansas a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I texted Jim that game. That was a game that he went to. I texted Jim and I said, you know, hey, I forget what I actually texted him. He texted me back, woo, damn pig suey.
Yeah, that was the game that actually led to Arkansas then being ranked, I believe. But anyways, yeah, but, you know, obviously the when do the rankings come out tomorrow? Is it noon?
Yeah, it's not even yet. They come out early. I don't know exactly. Or
shortly
about
before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's either 12 or shortly before it, because I know it's before the NFL games start up.
Yeah, there's more people out on the field with the Texas A&M than there ever was with Arkansas.
Oh, I mean, it was a pretty packed house tonight, so.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, you know what? I think we are going to cut it a bit short for tonight. We got about 4 minutes left. Thank you, Lou and JB, for joining me tonight. Just a reminder for anybody who is listening either on the archives here, every Thursday night, if you're a Survivor fan, we have a recap show that we do to recap the previous night's episode of Survivor 41. We will, of course, have another one this upcoming Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you guys haven't done so yet, subscribe to the Missy AE podcast either on blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE or by subscribing on iTunes or Apple Podcasts as well as Amazon Music. And if you want to join the Whispers groups, you can do so by going to Facebook. You can search Survivor Whispers, Big Brother Whispers, Sports Whispers. If you're a fan of spoilers, there's also Survivor Whispers Premiere, where basically that's our spoiler group that is run exclusively by Jim Early, whom without his help, none of these podcasts would be possible to bring to you. But yeah, you know, everybody, have a great rest of your, week, and sure. We will see you guys, for Sports Whispers Weekly. We will see you guys next Saturday, but otherwise, we will see you guys on Thursday night for another edition of the Survivor Recap Podcast.